keep it alive through these lines I write. I keep it live cause I thrive on mic. Just blow your mind tonight. I'm so hyped, but it's no hype. From this height, it's direct hits on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here, holding these days hostage. And I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love, and the love's in the air. I love doing this cause nothing compares, nothing can share that same type of feeling when you're feeling them flares. They can't catch it, it's havoc. I rip to a tear, switch a scenario. My stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change, and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away, asthmatic.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah. Just nod your head with it, so explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it, no scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool, hear my heartbeat beat into the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind, oh no. It's ponderoso, dope so, no overdose cause it's dope. Yo man, this is house grown, mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow, down like the Dow Jones. Bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd know we getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again. Move, little hooligan. Music for tuning in. Full time to the 10. I'm on my clock, like I told you. I'm doing this for dreams we pursuing.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Anti-Media Radio. Once again, with your host, Nick Burnaby, here on UCY.TV. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Welcome to the show. We're going to be covering a bunch of news today, and hopefully give you a few different perspectives that you may not be hearing or seeing typically in the media. So make sure you guys check us out 5 days a week now, because we have shows 5 days a week, same exact time. Bookmark us on UCY.TV and come back and check out the other hosts that come and the other awesome guests that we have on. We're going to have a few callers on tonight to talk about various topics, because there's just so much to go over. I mean, we could have a whole one-hour show just on what the cops are doing, because there's just so much going on with that and the police state and the surveillance state. We're going to go over some of that today, but there's just so much here that we have to like breeze through it. But on another note, I'm also joined on the call by Manny from LA. How you doing, Manny?
Hey, what's up, Nick? How you doing? And you're right about that. You know, we can cover a lot about the cops, because I mean, they're just completely out of control and stuff like that, you know, and some topics actually you can talk about more than others, you know. Actually, we can have a whole topic on beautiful women too, you know how it is, and stuff like that. So thanks for doing the show. You're doing a great job. Okay, bro.
Thanks, man. And thanks for calling in. You're gonna be co-hosting with me tonight, because we're not gonna have DB on until later. He's a little busy with some classes that he's taking, but he will be joining us eventually here on the show. But
okay,
let's get into this news stuff, because there's just so much to go over. I don't know if you heard about this yet, but the country's first government-run recreational marijuana store opened up in Columbia River Gorge in Washington State. And so this, to me, is kind of a big topic. And, you know, they claim that the money that's going to be earned at this government-run weed shop is going to, like, go into government funds and into the city's like general fund, so they'll be able to like spend it later on. But you know, the thing for me is that, you know, here in California it's not really that way, but in a lot of these states, like in Washington, they have these government run liquor stores, and now obviously they're going to start having these government run weed stores. So I mean, I guess there's two different ways of looking at this. To me, I mean, could this be a good thing? I mean, we heard that all that revenue was generated in Colorado that supposedly is going to go into the schools from the tax revenue, from the marijuana, from the cannabis sales. I mean, if the money is actually being used for schools, then yeah, I mean, I could support that. But, you know, at the same time, we're talking about just feeding more money into this system. And of course, you're getting taxed on the cannabis that you're buying at the legal shops. And, you know, I think a lot of people are probably just going to stick to what they're doing right now and buying it from their friends and stuff, because then they can keep it, you know, under the table. But I think this is kind of it's kind of gives us a little window into the direction that the country is going in. Because, you know, as we all know, in the last few years, marijuana legalization has become a very trending topic. The majority of the country, the popular vote would support legalizing it. And then we heard today, a big story that was out today was that Rand Paul and Cory Booker are going to be introducing a bill into the Senate that could federally legalize cannabis. And so that's a whole nother, you know, a whole nother topic. We could be seeing the federal legalization coming in the very near future. I mean, it could be in 2016 or even before that. I don't know. But we all here in California, we've been thinking that we're going to have recreational use by 2016 for sure. And, you know, there's already three states that are recreational. And then I think D.C. just became recreational as well. So you got to keep in mind that the government isn't all of a sudden just saying, oh, yeah, we realize weed isn't bad. Well, they're starting to see the dollar signs that could be made by taxing the hell out of it. One of those states, I think it might have been Washington, actually, they've got like a 50% tax on the cannabis, 40, 50% tax. I mean, that's crazy. So I don't know. What do you think about that, Manny? Like, what do you think? I mean, I think it's a good thing that we're legalizing it. But I think we have to be careful, because if these ideas start to proliferate, these government-run shops, that could turn into a kind of a bad thing.
Yeah, it could, actually, because you see that's what was promised with the lottery, you know, about the schools and stuff like that in California, and you see what happens. I don't see much money going to the schools, you know.
Yeah, what do they do with that lottery money anyway? I've been kind of wondering that. I haven't looked into it yet, though.
Yeah, we need to look into it, seriously, because, I mean, come on, there's some schools that are just having some problem. I mean, it's pathetic when I talk to teachers, and they have to be buying extra supplies with their own money. I mean, that's not fair, you know, because the teacher's never going to get rich off teaching students. They don't go into teaching because they're going to make big money. They go into teaching because they love what they do and stuff like that, you know. So, but I think it's sad when we have teachers putting money out of their own pocket because they care so much about the kids to buy extra this and extra that, you know.
Yeah, you bring up a great point there, because, you know, I think most of that money that goes into the lotto, it ends up getting thrown around in this bureaucracy, and then hardly any of it actually goes out towards the schools. And the money would probably be better off just left in within the community. And for instance, here with this, you know, marijuana store, government-run marijuana store, it's just you're feeding into this system that is probably going to be run like every other government system, horribly, you know, and it's inefficient and it's bloated and it's bureaucratic, and that's pretty much how it always is. So if we start seeing marijuana legalization at a federal level and you start seeing bipartisan support for it, well, you got to remember, man, these guys are looking at the dollar signs, you know, and they're saying, okay, we're gonna be able to tax this for billions. I mean, Colorado by itself was raking in on the tens of millions of dollars in taxes on this stuff. So I think this could, though, it could shoot them in the foot in a way, because they may legalize it and then they undermine their own drug war in a major way. Now, of course, this isn't going to affect cocaine, heroin, meth. It's only for cannabis and probably hemp, of course. But I don't really see, like, I don't see a huge economic shift from the existing marijuana trade, especially in states that already have like a high usage percentage. Like for instance, with California, like if they made it recreational for Californians to smoke, I don't think we would see that big of a change, because the trend that's going on right now is people are trending away from, you know, when we used to get the brick weed, that was like the mass produced crap. Now people are trending towards this more fine quality stuff, which is grown by individuals indoors. I don't really see the market shifting to where they can start getting that much more taxes. Yeah, sure, they could rake in millions of dollars in taxes, but compared to the entire like marijuana industry that exists currently under the, you know, in the black market, I don't think it's going to be that big of a change, and therefore I don't think that the government's going to be able to reap as many tax benefits as they think they're going to. And instead, what it's going to do is it's just going to undermine the entire drug war, and it's going to give us more freedom. They're doing it for money. They're not doing it for morality. They're not saying, oh, well, yeah, it's wrong that we've been doing it. We've been outlawing it so long, because if they really felt that way, they would have outlawed cigarettes. But we all know that you can't just outlaw stuff and expect it to go away. So that, you know, that doesn't work. But they're still trying to do it with all these drugs, even though they allow pharmaceutical corporations to manufacture drugs like heroin and drugs like meth. I mean, they're giving these meth-like pharmaceuticals to toddlers at this point that they say have ADHD, ADD, and all that stuff. I mean, this is crazy stuff. There's 10,000 toddlers in the United States that are on those kind of ADHD medicines that are basically a derivative of methamphetamine. So they allow these corporations to sell this stuff to kids. Man, imagine if you got caught selling heroin to a 10-year-old kid. I mean, you'd be so done. You'd go to prison for a long time. Now, I'm not saying that's right, but what I am saying is that it's a moral hypocrisy that they allow these pharmaceutical companies to sell these and these doctors to prescribe these drugs to these 5-year-old kids, and they get away with it, yet a drug dealer does it, and they're put away for good. So it's a typical case of American hypocrisy. Our government is so good at it, but now they're starting to think they can make some money on it, and it's a prospect that we, you know, can embrace, but we have to be wary about as well, because just like anything else, the government tries to take over industries, they try to take over the healthcare systems, they've taken over the education systems and all that stuff, and you know, look at the product, you know, it's not a good. It's never a good thing when it's a government takeover. So we just got to keep that in mind when we start, because I'm all for complete legalization of cannabis, recreational, everything, all drugs, in fact. But, you know, on the topic of cannabis, like, I'm all for the complete decriminalization of it. It's just that we got to keep in mind there's going to be a bunch of players that are going to try to corporatize it. And I don't think we want that. You know, it's we talk about black market economics because it's a great way to undermine the state. Well, then we got to keep it up. We can't just, okay, legalize it. Everyone go buy weed at Walmart. No, that's not a good idea. You know, because then we're just feeding into the machine. Yeah, we're not getting thrown in jail for using it, but we're feeding right into it. So all the people out there, just people that smoke or whatever, or vape or whatever you do, make edibles, keep that in mind. In the states that are already legal, I've seen varying reports. I mean, we hear that there's these big sales of marijuana legally, but I've also seen reports of the black market for marijuana in Colorado, in fact, growing, because now people can't get thrown in jail for it. The black market's also growing as well. So I mean, it seems like the whole economy is going up. So,
what's going on in Alaska now that they legalized it?
Oh, it's like a zombie apocalypse. No, I'm just kidding. I don't know. It's been quiet. I mean, everyone's probably just chilling out and getting baked. So I haven't heard of any massive like deaths or people driving off the road or anything like that. And then there was that study, of course, that came out a few weeks ago, that showed that driving while stoned actually isn't dangerous. It doesn't make you a worse driver. It's like you're like 100 times less likely to crash if you're stoned than if you're drunk. But yeah, that's. I mean, it's a topic that we have to be concerned about. Whenever the government is getting excited about something, you got to be concerned, you know, because they're gonna try to do co-opting or whatever. Anyway, this brings us into our next story here, and this is a big piece that we have on the antimedia.org right now. It's called "The Mass Incarceration of America: How Did We Let This Happen?" And this is part one of a 5-part series by one of our new team members by the name of Bobby Rodrigo. You may also know him from he's part of the Coffee Party USA, which is really cool. It's like it's a political group that they're not Democrats and they're not Republicans. They're independents. And, you know, they're very freedom-oriented type of – it's a very freedom-oriented organization. He also has a radio show called I Take Liberty With My Coffee, and he also works with me at the Solutions Institute, which we're going to be talking about on an upcoming show, which is like an activist group that really helps people get their movements off the ground and helps them with a bunch of expertise and all that kind of stuff. Anyway, we have this story up. And it's part one of five, so this is going to be a five-part series. And it's all about how the U.S. has basically become an incarceration state. You know, we talk about this so often, and so many people talk about this all the time. The U.S. only has 5% of the world's population, but 25% of the world's prisoners. You know, and of course, disproportionately, it's poor people, minorities that are stuck in these things, and it's just the very fact that the U.S. has so many people in jail, so many people in prison. It basically undermines all of our moral authority. So, by that very fact, we go around the world saying like, "Oh, North Korea, you're horrible. Iran, you're bad people." You know, Assad, you're bad. Libya, Gaddafi, you're bad. But in all actuality, almost everything that any of those guys have ever done or ever could have done is much less than what the U.S. is doing right now when it comes to the prison system. You know, we're housing millions of people in prisons. We spend more money on jailing prisoners, many of which are, of course, nonviolent, many of which are drug offenders, many of which are in jail over cannabis. We spend more money on that than we spend on education, on higher education, you know, and it's just so hypocritical to me that even though our government is perpetuating this grand, I don't know what to call it. I mean, to me, it's like a form of slavery. It's like a form of torture. It's like a form of genocide in a way. I mean, this is like the most horrible thing that exists in the world is the U.S. prison system. Yet at the same time, we go around the world telling Russia they're bad and telling everyone else they're bad, you know, and giving people slaps on the wrist and blowing them up if they don't listen. But you know, the truth of the matter is that one of the biggest injustices in the whole world is being committed right now against the American people, and the American people are also paying for it. And anybody else that lives in the U.S. that pays some kind of taxes, you're all paying for this shit, guys. We're all paying for this, you know? So we got to defund it because just like the reason why the government is trying to legalize cannabis now because they're seeing dollar signs. Well, guess what? We want to send a message. Well, then there's no other thing to do than just to outright defund it. You know, and the whole question is how do we get to that point? I don't exactly know. We've been talking about this tax strike idea for a long time. Well, not for a long time, for a few months. And I think that could be a good start. There is that Ali talked about this on I don't know if it was our last show or second to last show. About that BDS movement, boycott, divest, sanction, which is being used against, it's being used by just individuals against Israel. People are boycotting them until they remove the siege from Palestine and let the people be free and let them actually move about and let them actually have an economy, because right now their economy is completely under the thumb of Israel. So not only, you know, when Israel decides to bomb them and stuff, yeah, that's horrible, but all the other time when they're supposedly at peace, they're not actually at peace. They're actually being under an economic boycott, and they're being held in, and Israel doesn't let the flow of goods in. They actually weigh out the food. They only allow a certain amount of food per capita to go into Israel. Like, it's completely rationed. I mean, to go into Palestine, sorry, and Gaza. So it's like completely rationed out. But the movement is working. I don't know if anybody else saw this, but what's his name? The scientist in the wheelchair. I can't remember his name right now. Anyway, there's like this academic boycott going as well, where there's professors, colleges, student organizations going and removing all of their investments and all of their support from any company, any organization that has dealings that has to do with Israel or the Israeli government. And I think that is the way that we can really start attacking this prison industrial system, this incarceration state, whatever you want to call it. It's locking up too many of our brothers and sisters for victimless crimes. And, you know, a lot of the people that are in there have mental illness. A lot of them are just drug addicts. A lot of them just, you know, we're our business people, they're entrepreneurs that were doing in many ways a legitimate business, especially people, I think people that were in, that are in jail for cannabis sales. I think that's a legitimate business because cannabis isn't harming anybody. I mean, if you're selling meth, okay, that's messed up because you're killing people. I mean, you're hurting people bad when you're selling that. But when you're selling cannabis, you're not doing a disservice to anybody. You're helping people. By supplying them with a product that they can use recreationally or medically. So they're also trying to, with this whole incarceration, is they're killing entrepreneurialism, they're killing innovation, they're putting all these small business people behind bars. Yeah, they have a different product than most people have, but they're still entrepreneurs, they're still business people. And they're all, most of them young, and they're getting, you know, it's draining our brains, especially if you look at where all these people are coming from, they're coming from the inner cities, from the poor areas. They're draining all the brain power out by sending all these people to prison, you know? So, I mean, a lot of people don't even think about that aspect of this war on drugs and this incarceration state is the brain drain factor, man. I mean, that to me is one of the things that really, really hurts these communities and their economies. What do you think?
Yeah, it's just basically, it's kind of sad that our government is worried about somebody being on pot, but they don't hesitate to give you all this morphine and codeine and stuff like that in the hospital. I mean, it's just sad, you know?
Yeah, man, of course. And then they take these kids that, and these young kids that get caught with drugs or whatever, put them in these youth facilities. And then when they get in the youth facilities, they pump them full of pharmaceutical drugs. You know what I mean? I mean, it's like, what the hell? You just got in trouble for selling drugs. Now go to jail and let us sell you drugs. And then we're going to charge everyone else that lives around the community for them in taxes. That's basically what they're doing, right? I mean, it's just so hypocritical, right? So back to this whole divesting away from the police state. I guess we gotta first figure out who is investing and supplying these prisons with money, with investment. We know the taxpayer is, but of course they're corporations. They're making a bunch of profit, right? So there's other corporations that are investing in these things. And one of the most horrible things I found out, I think Ali told me this, is that a lot of the colleges, like the college pension funds and all this kind of stuff, they're investing in these private prisons too. You know, so we gotta start finding out where the funding's coming from, right? We gotta start finding out where the tax funding is coming from. And then we gotta start boycotting them just like they're boycotting Israel, you know? And I think that is the most effective, nonviolent way that we can immediately make them at least take notice. You know, and fortunately for us here in California, you know, sometimes we're ahead of the curve on some things. Sometimes we're like way behind the curve or going the opposite way that the curve should be going on a lot of other things. But I think it was what, Prop 49 that passed here in California in the last election. And it basically put, you know, the dagger in the back of the drug war here in California, at least on the small scale. Any personal use of any narcotic, any controlled substance is now in California is now just a misdemeanor. And if you get, so like if you get caught doing coke or smoking meth, and as long as you only get caught with a personal amount on you, that, you know, if you're not actually selling it, then it's a misdemeanor and you just get a ticket. You don't have to go to jail and all that stuff. So, you know, that to me is a positive step in undermining this. So we have that option as well, where we can, you know, try to undermine it that way. Keep in mind the drug war is a bunch of laws. We can get those laws repealed. Repealing the drug war, I mean, that's something that we can, if we're really going to talk about, you know, because I'm not a huge believer in using government power to do anything. But if we're just talking about repealing laws, taking power away from the government, I'm all for that. I think we should repeal the drug war. First, we have to start by defunding it. Once we defund it, we get their attention. Then we repeal it, you know, and I mean, that's one way of going after it. But something's got to be done, because looking at the numbers here, and I'm back on this article here at the Anti-Media, I mean, looking at what's going on, I mean, it all started back, it really got bad back in 1971 when Nixon declared the war on drugs. But also it was Lyndon Johnson, which was the guy that took over after JFK got shot. You know, he's the one that really started kickstarting these ideas of drug control, and he had a program called the National Strategy on Crime, and it just started the process, and then of course Nixon started the war on drugs, and ever since then we went from a nation of about 300,000-400,000 prisoners in 1970. To a nation, current times, at about 2.6, 2.8 million people in jail. So it's crazy. It was just this government overreach in 1970, which is known as the war on drugs, and it's basically them telling you what you can and can't do to your own body while at the same time allowing corporations to sell you the same exact shit. And that's basically it. So we got to go back, repeal that 1971 law. We got to repeal the war on drugs, defund it, and all that. And then maybe we can start seeing a little bit more of what freedom should actually start to look like. Because then a lot of our brothers, sisters, family will be out of jail. And they'll actually be able to contribute to society. Instead of everybody paying $60,000 a year for each prisoner, maybe we could actually put that money towards something productive, like helping people get education and stuff like that. You know. anyway, we're joined by our co-host DB Schwartz. How you doing, man?
Doing good, Nick. You know, a lot of the things you're talking about that happened, you know, 44 years ago, are all coming to a head now. And like, you remember what you said, that fiat currencies don't last longer than four decades historically, and that's what we're at now. And they all go hand in hand. You think it's a coincidence? The war on drugs happened the exact same time that the gold standard was repealed for the dollar. I mean, this was a total control grid meeting set down. I mean, now both parents had to work, which means kids got in trouble more, which means they made new criminals. And the list goes on and on and on.
Yeah, exactly. I forgot to even bring that up, you know, that, cause that enabled, you know, what Nixon did as well was when he made that Bretton Woods agreement. That's basically when the country went bankrupt because we couldn't afford to pay for the Vietnam War anymore. So Nixon, instead of defaulting on our debt, that's when they created, exactly. You know, they created the petrodollar. They basically went bankrupt, created the petrodollar because we had the biggest military in the world. No one could say no to it. Yep. And that's basically, you know, and then what happened was they no longer had to back up the currency with anything. So there was no longer any tangible assets. You know, you didn't actually have to have wealth to create money anymore. And that, like you're saying, that's what enabled us to pay for the drug war, because we never would have had the money to house almost 3 million people for $60,000 a year had it not been for the Federal Reserve being able to just create money out of thin air.
And you can go down the rabbit hole even further, Nick, because what happened was we needed some kind of startup capital for the war on drugs, which really was the establishment of the monopoly of the drug trade worldwide, which is run by us. Okay, let's not mince words. And what that did was gave us a black budget for our black military operations. That's where we are at today, man. You don't have XC or Blackwater when you don't have a printing press, because these dudes work only for money. And we can't get regular soldiers with a conscience to go over and kill random people for no reason. You got to either rile them up or brainwash them. It's just not working anymore like it used to. So what's left? Private armies, pay him with the printing press. Now that the printing press is basically being told to be shut down by Russia and China, guess what? Now we're going to fight for it when it's been illegitimate for the last 44 years.
Yeah, you know, there's a one thing you said there about the drug trade and how, you know, the CIA has been implicated many times in facilitating it. And, you know, there was just a report that came out not too long ago. I think it was only about a year ago about the how some of the cartel members get immunity in America. You know, these guys will be caught driving who knows how much heroin across the country, and they go to jail, and then they get immunity, and they're let out. They're let go right away. And then one guy wasn't let go, and then he took him to court, and he's like, "Hey, you guys promised me immunity because we were snitching on the other cartel." And so, yeah, I mean, the government does, in a way, at least facilitate. And then here's the other thing that I found pretty insane as far as what you were referencing there. The heroin production in Afghanistan has gone up exponentially.
4,000%, right?
The Taliban almost had it eradicated. The Taliban had almost completely eradicated opium from Afghanistan. Now, I'm not saying the Taliban are good people. they're committing a war on drugs. That's stupid. And they're horrible with a lot of other things. But, I mean, it just goes to show, it says something, that we go in there, and we're supposedly going in there to shut down all this bad stuff that's happening, and then the heroin production just explodes.
Right. And, you know, Afghanistan is a classic case of using a false flag to go in and grab resources for the future. And what they did, Nick, was it's not for heroin. These opiates are for our pharmaceutical industry. And then they're sitting on top of $2 trillion of lithium, which is going to power all our vehicles as soon as oil runs out. And that day is not too far away.
Yeah, man. I can't say who told me, but, you know, I've had someone confirm to me that has knowledge of it, that they are using that opium, not as much for heroin, but a lot of it is going to the pharmaceuticals, because that's what they make like the Oxycontin out of and all that, a lot of that stuff, you know.
And who knows what else they're making for the troops now. I've heard of these painkiller Joe shots they take where 24 hours they're just a zombie. I mean, they can become pretty much pain-free.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I also want to comment about basically, you know, when it comes to the, you know, supposedly, you know, fighting the drug war and all that stuff, I was very appalled by the, you know, finally hearing the DEA agent, you know, say that they were told not to target the rich areas and stuff like that, you know. So that's, even the process is not across the board on that, you know.
Well, you can't lock up the campaign donors, man.
Yeah, that's true,
DD. That's how the game is played. If there's one reason why something bad is happening, it's because there's some reason for moneyed interests to get involved.
Yeah, good point, actually.
So, yeah, I mean, well, again, it goes back to this serial hypocrisy. And for me, that's been my phrase of the day. Serial hypocrisy, because while they condemn the you know, while they have this drug war going on, they at the same time are facilitating this opium trade. We all know damn well that Big Pharma is in bed with the government. I mean, that's not a secret to anybody anymore, right?
They run it. I mean, you can tell where the campaign donations are coming from, these big $6-5 million checks some of these single candidates are getting. That's insane. I mean, they can get their whole budget covered by one donor. And then people wonder why their voice isn't heard. They don't need you anymore because of Citizens United, and they never did anyway.
Yeah, and even more insidious, and I don't know if Manny can elaborate on this at all. I know it's kind of something we stay away from. But, you know, one of the more insidious things is that, you know, a lot of people have suggested that the CIA also is, you know, in one way or another, working with the drug cartels in Mexico as well. I don't know to what extent. I know they've provided, you know, the immunity like I was talking about to these certain cartel members and let them get away with whatever the hell they wanted.
Mutual
assistance. We also know about Operation Fast and the Furious, where they were the government was, the ATF was literally willingly, knowingly allowing people to traffic large amounts of weapons, AKs, ARs, to the cartels. And they supposedly were going to track the serial numbers or something like that. I mean, I don't know exactly what they were thinking with that, but we know that they did that. So, I mean, this is just scratching the surface. There's been a lot of whistleblowers out there that have stepped forward and suggested the CIA was running drug operations. There was that one, what was that guy? He was a police chief or something, a police captain, something out of L.A. I can't remember his name, but he was a member of the LAPD for a long time. And he came out and he was like, you know what? The CIA is running drugs into Los Angeles. And, you know, so I wouldn't doubt that. And so it does go back to the serial hypocrisy aspect of things. They're using us. They're throwing us in prison. They're torturing us in prison. I mean, the American justice system, the prison system, it's just torture. You know, it's torture. It's kidnapping.
It's slave labor.
It's slave labor. I mean, it's all of the nastiest things that a society could ever do. And we're
why are we importing anything from China? I want that answered. Why aren't factories at every jail? And why are these guys not being paid at least minimum wage? I know that may sound screwed up to some people, but yeah, they're prisoners or whatever. If they're not doing life terms, if these guys aren't violent criminals, why can't they make minimum wage in there and work their ass off and pay some of their court fees back and all that bullshit and their own living expenses? What the hell are we doing?
That's a good question, and I don't know what the hell we're doing. We're doing it wrong, though, whatever it is.
They should all be required to work, man, and check in and out and clock in and out and pay at least part of their whatever it is, 70 grand a year it costs to house them.
Yeah, 60,000, 70,000 bucks a year. I mean, we spend, what, $3,000, $4,000 on the elementary school education. It costs like what, $40,000 to put someone through Harvard. You could put everyone through higher education for, I think they said, $60 billion a year or something like that. And it's just completely backwards.
If everything's gonna be monetized, Nick, like it seems like people are pretty comfortable with that happening, it needs to be available to a way that benefits society, not just the few. Like, put prisoners to work, sure. But, like, have them pay for their own stuff that way. You know what I mean? Like, help us, the taxpayer, not the insane and obscenely rich people. And they just don't need it. They're just acquiring zeros out of thin air, and they can't do anything with it. It's not like these people can build a rocket ship and leave. They're stuck here, too. So I don't know what we're doing as a society. We just need to rearrange the money flow.
Yeah, man, and we got to have the right prisoners in jail. You don't have the nonviolent, you know, victimless criminals, right? I don't know if you saw the article a while back, but there was something like 400,000 rape kits that had yet to be tested, man.
Yeah.
And, you know, of women that have, reported a rape, they've been tested, and there are 400 of the kits had yet to be tested. Yet at the same time, they're using SWAT team to kick down people's door. Just that guy the other day in Florida last week kicked down his door over weed. He had a few, a little bit of weed. He kicked down his door, shoot him in the face. Guy is completely unarmed. We on the anti-media, we got an interview with one of his friends that was actually in the house when it happened. You could read that account. And I mean, it's heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking. I mean, the guy everybody who says that guy was completely harmless. He's just a stoner, nonviolent, didn't even own a weapon. There wasn't a weapon in the house.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. The costs are staggering to us, too. We're topping $1 billion now annually to imprison people in prison for drugs that is just marijuana. I mean, just $1 billion just thrown away every year. And that alone could, you know, do everything you'd ever want to make the decriminalization of that plant something that would be feasible and just tax the sales. That's all they have to do. What was it? They have 45,000 people in jail for marijuana right now. I just imagine that.
Wow, man, that's the size of a decent-sized town. Now, you didn't catch this because you were probably on the road. We talked about earlier there was the a marijuana store opening in Washington that's going to be government-owned. I don't want to jump too deep into it because we already went over it. But that's happening. And so it brought me to the point that you just mentioned as far as the taxation of cannabis and all that stuff. We got to keep in mind, and Manny brought up a great point. It's like, well, they say that the lotto system in California is supposed to be funding the schools too, and they say that the marijuana is going to fund the schools over in Colorado. I mean, you look at how bureaucratic of a nightmare that's turned out to be here. So, you know, you always have to keep that in mind too, is that, you know, if they do legalize it, good. But taxing the hell out of it, I mean, that can be a bad thing, because then we're adding to the bureaucracy.
The only way you could get around that, Nick, would be like 100% of proceeds of taxes go to some executory trust, and that trust just cuts a check divided by all the public school teachers and gives them a bonus at the end of the year. That's something the public could get behind, and it couldn't be fucked with, because it's just one main thing. It does one thing. You can't derive from it at all.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, something like that I would actually, at a local level, get behind, because you know, then you don't have to have the bureaucrats added to the equation. It's just, hey, here's the system. All the taxes from this goes to these people, and it goes to help the kids out, and that's it. No ifs, ands, or buts. But in reality, a lot of the time, it's at the discretion of bureaucrats, and they get to say, oh, well, the money's going to be spent this way, and oh, well, we can't spend that much money on education this year because we got this.
This gets around that. It's just a fund it goes into, and at the end of the year, however many public school full-time teachers there are get equal shares of that huge pot. So what is it, $35 million Colorado made? And how many teachers do you think Colorado has as a state? I don't know, 10,000? So they'd each get, I don't know, do the math, whatever. But that's a nice chunk for them. And a lot of them spend money out of their own pocket to keep these classrooms going. So that would help kind of mitigate that problem.
Yeah, and you know, you got this real time story that's just happened, New Jersey, where Chris Christie cut $148 million from hospital charity care to you know, make up for his budget shortfall, because he mismanaged his budget, so he's cutting money from the hospital charities, and that's the same exact problem that we're gonna run into if we're not careful when it comes to the legalization of drugs and legalization of cannabis, which I don't really consider a drug. Is the same bureaucratic stuff, and so we got to move forward with fresh ideas, of non-bureaucratic ideas, you know, and you know, put the power, if we're gonna put the power in the people's hands by voting, well, then people shouldn't be voting for your politicians. We should be voting for ideas, you know, like Prop 49 that decriminalize all drugs in California. Those are the things we vote for. We don't vote for these asshole politicians that promise us the world and deliver nothing. You know what I mean? But I think that people are getting it. Younger people are. I mean, it shows, because younger people just aren't voting because they're so fed up. They're so frustrated with the state of affairs in the government. They're so tired of these asshole politicians like Lindsey Graham, John McCain, I mean, Obama, all these a-holes that are just promise everybody the world or are just complete propagandists. People are tired of it, you know, and we can get behind ideas like 47. In fact, I remember in Colorado, more people voted to legalize cannabis than they voted for the politicians. They voted, like, more people voted for the legalization than they did for the governor. So that just kind of goes to show you that people are like, you know what, screw these politicians, but I'm still down to legalize it. So, you know, that's kind of what's happening. People are losing faith in politicians and politics. And I don't blame them. Politicians are all idiots, and they all do stupid things.
The only thing that makes sense anymore, Nick, are city councils, because you can go there and just, like, literally, like, scream in their face. If enough people are there and it's, like, a unified front, like, there's really nothing they can do about it except just bend to your whim. So I guess we do need direct political, like, action committees or whatever, or groups that are, like, people that just go to all of these councils and just make people aware, make everybody just unable to avoid the facts coming out.
Yeah, you know, and at local level, I'm not sure if people are familiar with PANDA, People Against the NDAA, and it's an organization that opposes the National Defense Authorization Act language that allows indefinite detention of American citizens. They have a model of working at the local level, and they've got various towns, various cities to nullify all that federal language. And they're able to say, look, if any feds come into this town and try to implement this policy, then our local sheriffs or whatever have the authority to arrest those feds. You know, and that kind of stuff can work, because we got to keep in mind that one of the biggest problems that we face as a civilization, not just in the U.S., but everywhere, is centralization of political power. And that happens no matter your economic system, whether you're in a corporatocracy like here in the U.S. or a corporate communism like you are in China, or a feudalist society that you are in Russia, whatever. They all have the same thing. It's a centralized monopolistic political power that is heavily influenced by the money players, which in the U.S. it's big corporations. In China, it's big corporations. In Russia, well, it's big corporations. So it's kind of a recurring thing. Regardless of your political ideology, you're always going to be co-opted by these corporate interests if you're not taking the right measures to prevent that. And that's probably one of the hardest things to do. You remember how long the early United States fought against having a banking system and fought against having a central bank and all that, you know, and we all know the story of Andrew Jackson fighting against the banking system. Yeah, Andrew Jackson was an asshole too, but still he understood that the monetary system, we couldn't allow it to be co-opted by, back then I think it was the Rothschilds and stuff. He understood that, you know, but it always ends up that these guys end up taking over, and that's one of the reasons we toppled Libya, and that's one of the reasons we're going after Iran. It's one of the reasons why we're at odds with Russia. You know, in many situations it goes back to that, and it's always the product of centralized political power. So the only viable solution I see right now is just decentralization, whether we're talking about going back to state level, going back to county level, community level, individual level. You know, it's got to be practiced at every level.
It's got to take it until we break down this whole system and come up with something else. And that's going to take evolution, another generation or two probably. We have to do it. Happened in Madison, 25,000 strong have to make a stand, dude. Like, that's a lot of people. And imagine 25,000. If a movement gets going with that, that's just off of one incident. I mean, that's way bigger than Ferguson. You know, they're going to end up making a huge change, because look, Ferguson's own police force now is probably going to get, I guess, they're going to get rid of it.
Yeah, they're talking about dissolving the Ferguson police.
But who replaces them? They want DHS in there, which of course is exactly the game plan. So we've got to make sure it's private enterprise.
Exactly.
People that can be held accountable, not a private corporation masquerading as the government.
Yeah, exactly. It's just like you know, it's just like this whole thing with the drug war. You know, we got to be careful because, you know, Obama's out there touting the whole body cam thing, and yeah, we got to get all the cops with body cams, and you know, they're acting like they're doing us a favor. But in reality, I mean, if you look at what's been happening, the body cams aren't preventing deaths. You know, the guys will kill someone on body cam, and then they'll just say, well, body cam wasn't working. Or in the case of, like in Los Angeles, well, we're just not going to release the body cam footage. It's at our discretion. We get to do whatever we want. So once again, it's just, you know, you put the discretion in the hands of police bureaucrats. Well, what do you think they're going to do? They're going
to
protect their own.
And those are really to establish a facial recognition database among people that cops interact with on the regular, so that cops everywhere know one guy from another who's on that database. So, you know, their whole thinking is that logically the same faces that this camera sees over and over and over again, these cops dealing with people, the people are going to end up on some kind of another list, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, you know, and that's a great point. And that brings us right into our next story, actually, which is about facial recognition. Scotland Yard officials, and now, of course, this isn't in the U.S., this is over in the U.K., but Scotland Yard officials are trying to convince everybody in the U.K. to put a camera, a CCT camera, in their house.
Xbox One?
Yeah, I mean, people already have them in there, they just don't realize it. But what the guy was saying, and he's the chief of the Scotland Yard, He's like, if you already have a camera, well, put it up at face level so that we can make sure to capture the face. So we can, and then he says it right there in his quote, because our facial recognition database has gotten really good. So if any criminals ever come to your house, you know, make sure you got it on. Make sure you got your camera at eye level so that we can, you know, use our facial recognition to trap, you know, to find out who broke into your house. And of course, once again, it's the government, just like Obama and selling us the body cam thing.
Digital bug book.
It's the government telling you, hey, we're doing this for your own good. But in reality, we all know that this database is not going to be used for good. It's going to be used to crush dissent if it ever exists, to make a dragnet for activists. And you know they were implementing this technology back during the NATO protests in Chicago too. I have a few friends that were there, and they were telling me all about it.
It's just the dying grasps of a corpse, my friend, when they do these dragnets and stuff. Because what's going to happen when me and you can make power at home? Me and you can grow our own food if we have unlimited power at home. We don't need anything anymore. We don't need anybody. It becomes a barter economy, a high-tech barter economy. That's where it's going, no matter what they try to do. People will eventually self-finance things they can build on a 3D printer. Do you know what I mean, Nick? I'll print you a car. You can pay me every month. Fuck the banks. This is going to happen soon. They are terrified of it, and that's why they're setting this whole shit up.
Yeah, you know, and I agree with you. I think that what we're witnessing, and it's like any empire, man. You know, the Roman Empire, it was a republic for a long time, right? And then at a certain point, when Julius Caesar turned it into an empire,
yep.
It only lasted for a finite, you know, period. And every empire only lasts a finite period. Every empire that's ever existed in the history of humanity has collapsed. And sometimes it's from external forces, but a lot of times it's internal strife, you know. And that's exactly what's building up here because of this disparity. One, as we talked about, the whole prison industrial complex, the war on drugs, the wealth disparity is horrendous in the U.S. I mean, we're one of the – I think we're probably the worst country in the world when it comes to wealth disparity, one of the worst anyway, as when it comes to the developed industrialized countries. We got horrible wealth disparity compared to Europe, Japan, places like that. I think England is probably in a similar to us because England, London's actually got the highest concentration of billionaires.
They're much worse though. Like overall, if you look at, you know, the average person over there, they can't get a big gigantic SUV and a huge big screen TV like people over here, even lower class, can still do. But those things are eroding because, you know, we still have the reserve currency, and that's. Does that have? What does that have on it? Another year, maybe, before we have to start some massive conflict to keep it going. So it's inflated. I mean, they're actually anticipating the average person making about 15 grand once the dollar collapses. You know, down from 37 right now. So if we actually allow that to happen to our living standards before we enact things like 3D printing and, like I said, making power at home, we're all going to be living third world. I hope people kind of get that.
Yeah, man, exactly. You know, decentralized economics is going to be the thing that will make or break you when it comes down to it, you know. And it's – I mean, the thing that kind of discredits a lot of talk like this is that there's these a-holes out there that are like every day they're like, oh, the economy's collapsing tomorrow and end of the world situation. It's like no, those people are exaggerating. But here's the bare facts. Every empire eventually collapses. It's just a matter of when. The U.S., as you were saying, with the NSA, with the Patriot Act, with all these erosions of civil liberties, civil rights, with all this militarization, we're witnessing the final days of an empire, and we're unfortunately part of it.
Exactly, because think about it in reality. After World War II, we owned the biggest portion of Germany, the west part. We owned basically most of NATO, owned it. And we own Japan in full. So meaning we actually dictate their treasury and everything. We're basically siphoning money off of them right now to keep afloat. And that can only last so long. So when they're saying the economy's dying, it's because of war. That's what war does. It expends resources and they can't be rebuilt, especially human resources. So that's what's going on right now.
Yeah. You know, and this kind of, you know, this whole CCTV thing, I mean, the UK is already the most surveilled population in the world, right? They got one camera per 11 people, one surveillance camera per 11 people. And this guy, now he wants the cameras in every home. I mean, most businesses have them, but he wants them in the homes. And think about the amount of things that have been hacked lately. And I don't know about you, but you know, I've got a few friends that have CCTV cameras. And the ones that are the mainstream ones that you buy from like Costco or Walmart or whatever, they're Wi-Fi enabled. They can be hacked like simply. I mean, you remember the whole case about when Google was driving around with their Google cars and they got everybody's Wi-Fi and stuff. I mean, that's Google, man. Think about what the NSA has. If you put CCTV cameras in your home that are Wi-Fi enabled, you're going to get hacked, and anybody can use that footage to blackmail you or do whatever the hell they want with it. They can do whatever the F they want with that information. I know there was one story just a few weeks ago about the baby camera getting hacked. Did you see that one?
Yeah, I mean, imagine what you can do now if you're motivated enough and you're sicko.
Yeah, so I mean, if baby cameras are being hacked, your CCTV camera is going to be hacked. I remember at the place I used to work, our camera that we had in the warehouse was internet enabled. You could access it to your phone. So yeah, and if they want that, they could have it. But yeah, I mean, it's just a bad idea all around. You don't want more surveillance in your private space. There's huge psychological implications too. The erosion of privacy. And Snowden has referenced this a lot, and that's why I admire Snowden, because I think he's brilliant. I think the guy's a genius level.
He should not come home though. I mean, the guy's insane, and I hope that was a planted story. I hope that was planted.
Here's the thing, man. Here's the thing. It's like I've thought about this too. Sometimes you can come home and do the jail just to prove a point, man.
But would it be jail or would it be execution? That's the question.
No, I think he's way too big of a profile to be executed.
I don't know.
And, you know, this kind of – I want to go in two directions here, because I do want to talk about Libya and Hillary Clinton. But just quickly, I just want to touch off on this hypocrisy. And that seems to be the theme of the show. General Petraeus, who leaked information to his mistress, classified information – he got slapped with a misdemeanor. He leaked classified CIA information to his mistress, and he got slapped with a misdemeanor and probation.
It was pillow talk.
Chelsea Manning, 30 years in prison. It's insane. It's total hypocrisy. Once again, I mean, over and over. All right, last story of the night. Everybody's talking about Hillary Clinton's emails and of course, once again, it's the superficial shit. Just like Brian Williams, just like Bill O'Reilly, they're talking about the superficial shit. But the fact of the matter is that there's a way bigger story about Hillary Clinton that's not being talked about right now. Because Libya was, in a large way, Hillary Clinton's war. It was her that helped topple Gaddafi. And now we got to take a sober look at what's going on in Libya. Libya has become an absolute failed state. It's just rival factions warring it up. Some of the rebels that we backed during the overthrow of Gaddafi, and now this is documented on benswan.com. Some of the rebels that we were backing when we overthrew Gaddafi, and now keep in mind that we knew that these guys had shadowy past. We already knew this guy was connected to Al-Qaeda. We still backed him. So keep that in mind. But now he is just formed an ISIS army in Libya, and it's already pretty big. And now thousands of fighters are already entering into Libya to join up with this guy. That was Hillary Clinton. Forget about the emails. Let's talk about Libya. Forget about Benghazi. Benghazi's not that big of a deal. Let's talk about what's going on in Libya. The whole country is screwed thanks to Hillary, Obama.
It'll break up into two probably, Nick.
We'll catch you on Wednesday. Thanks for tuning in to the Anti-Media 5 days a week. Yo, here we go, blow through the stereo.